So I'm like, now we got to trust for resurrection? I'm like, does that even happen? I'm like, I've never heard of, if I haven't heard of healing or right. experienced it, I'm like, I sure haven't heard of somebody being raised from the dead. I felt like God just kept pushing me into these whole new realms of belief and what he is prepared to do. And so having the things that happened that night were just amazing to me. I'm like, oh my goodness.
On August 5th, 2021, Frank East passed away at the young age of 21 after battling a bizarre aggressive cancer for a year and a half. Throughout the battle, his family, especially his parents, Kirk and Christy, believed that God would fully heal him, even preparing to pray for resurrection. What they got has filled their future with peace and hope and has robbed death of its sting. Welcome to A Stronger Faith, a podcast that brings you into the heart of the movement of God in the lives of everyday people. I'm Stacy McCants, and it's my joy to not only be able to sit across the table from the people who share these amazing experiences of the presence of God, but it's my joy to pray earnestly for God to speak to you through what you'll hear today. And I believe he'll do just that. Today's conversation is with a couple who lost their oldest son to cancer, but what you'll hear is probably not what you expect. If we've learned anything about God's nature through Scripture, it's that his workings are multiplicative, moving in many directions and well beyond our expectations. And that's certainly the case in today's conversation. Please meet Kirk and Christy East. Kirk and Christy East, you guys took some time out, and I'll be honest with you, I feel like we got a lot to talk about. Mm-hmm. And so I am not going to do a ton of intro stuff. Thank you for choosing to share this story. There's some amazing stuff in here. There's some hard stuff in here. But I just got to, I'm just always super humbled and super thankful when people carve out their time and their energy and their spiritual focus to come and do this work. So thank you.
Thank you for
Absolutely.
Having us.
Yeah.
It's a big deal. This is important stuff. And I'm looking forward to jumping into this. So here, there's a lot of different things that are going on here, but I feel like most of this can tie into Frank. Mm-hmm. So Frank, your son, oldest son,
mm-hmm. Oldest son.
Oldest son. How many children do you have?
Six.
Six children.
Mm-hmm.
God bless you on that. Frank passed away 3 years ago, almost 3 years ago, at the age of 21. And from what I know about it, from its a seemingly bizarre emergence of cancer that appeared in his leg.
Mm-hmm.
And as we brace ourselves to have a conversation into the holy ground that is a bereaved parent, I cannot think of something more difficult that happens on this earth than the loss of a child. I feel like we're not here to discuss the emotional roller coaster necessarily that was that, even though it was super real. Even the community of support, there's mm-hmm. so many things about it. I think you're here to discuss the presence of God,
mm-hmm.
which is what we do in this time. I think it's important to know what happened and to get that background, and there are things that are going to sort of spring off of that in mm-hmm. different directions. So I think the best place to probably start is how did you come to learn that Frank was ill?
Well, he had been working out with weights for at least a good year and a half. And this was starting, you know, in high school. And he had come to me a few times and said, my right leg is bigger than my left leg. And I said, well, that's normal. I'd worked out for years and you have one side of your body that's going to be a little bigger than the left, you know, right side bigger than the left side. And that's all he said. And so I didn't think anything about it. And I don't know how much time goes by, but it was a good bit of time, maybe at least 6 months, maybe. And he mentioned it again, and it didn't make, you know, any, it was just like, this is just weird, you know? And it may have been as much as a year later, and he's in college, and he comes home from college, and he said that again. And he'd been working out a lot in college. And I'm like, well, what are you talking about? Just show me. And he pulls up his shorts, and his right leg was, oh goodness, at least 10, 12 inches bigger than his left leg. And so, you know, immediately I thought, that's not good. That, you know, that's not normal. And it was weird that you could look at it from, say, the front, and it really just looked like his leg was muscular.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't look deformed or anything strange.
Yeah.
I didn't know what, you know, we go to the doctor and thinking, you know, and our initial doctor, primary care doctor said, well, it could be a blood clot. You know, he wasn't really sure. And which then just led to, you know, more testing until they finally figure out that it's,
That all happened in a week. Name. He went to the primary care on a Tuesday. And then on Friday morning, we got the phone call that, yes, it was cancer.
Did you have an idea of the severity of this?
It was a soft tissue sarcoma. So it began in the soft tissue of his leg. And it was typical for that, I get either that presence or that type of cancer, for it to spread to the lungs. So the first appointment that we had with an oncologist, that was, you know, he sent him immediately down. He was like, have you had a lung x-ray? And so he went, you know, immediately to another room, gets a lung x-ray, came back, and sure enough, there's like tumors all in his lungs.
Oh no.
Yeah. So we were in a state of shock. I do remember when that phone call came, you know, not being able to hold it together, because all the worst things came first, but a peace came immediately. That I know that morning, I think we got the phone call at 8 a.m. I don't think I left my bed that whole day, on the phone, praying with people. Just, that was the day God fixed us and put, my sister used the word, we're on a rock. We called it our rock the whole time. We're on the rock of just a faith, a trust in the Lord, and we're not going to look off the rock. We're not going to step off the rock. She said it might feel slippery at times, where it feels like we're slipping off our rock and losing our faith in what God's going to do. But our rock was, that's when we got on it, that Friday morning, on the right after the phone call with the doctor. I immediately called my sister and I said, go. And she knew we were waiting to hear, is it cancer or is it not cancer?
So when they said it had spread to his lungs, I didn't even know what that meant.
Yeah.
I just thought, oh, okay, well, I'm sure you have a way to take care of that.
Our first appointment was at the radiologist. Yes, the radiologist. And so that was before anybody saying what a prognosis could be. And that radiologist ended up telling Frank and I, well, you know, there's things like immunotherapies now, and not, don't think, you know, chemo, and think that's just, you know, has to be the path. So we, you know, still had some optimism, thinking, well, this doesn't sound so bad. The next appointment was with the oncologist at Children's, and found out that it was one of the worst, not worst, but it was one of, he would have to get one of the worst drugs. His chemo that he would have needed required checking into the hospital for 3 days at a time. One for three IVs. One was for the medicine, and two would be for hoping to keep the sickness from being overwhelming. So we just did not. We went into the appointment that he had to say what he was going to do medically, what his decision was, thinking he was going to choose the chemo. But they
still didn't give.
Oh yeah.
Virtually no chance of it working.
They gave him a 20% chance of it working for 5 years.
And then they said, and here's all the things
that can happen. So you got a prognosis, essentially. It says there's a 20% chance.
Right. That's when my brain went, oh, this, that's what we're dealing with.
Okay. So now that's where I want to know your response and approach. I mean, where did you go at that point? Personally, emotionally, in your faith? Is that when you jumped on the rock, or did you get knocked off?
We were already on it.
Okay, so I have to tell you where I came from for the previous 15 years, because obviously, you know, you think, all right, if you're got this wonderful relationship with Jesus, then you're prepared and, you know, you're ready to go through this. So I got to back up and give at least a little bit of background, because it's more miraculous to where God had taken me from and where he, you know, brought me to and what he delivered me from. So I'd come to Christ in 1991, had just gotten out of college, moved to Birmingham, hated my job, and was depressed every day. Just had the idea of working for myself, and God provided with me starting a janitorial business, cleaning office buildings. And from the beginning, the biggest thing that happened was him taking me through my spiritual kindergarten. I had no idea what the Christian life meant, what it was like. Didn't have a background of seeing that lived out with my parents. So it was God introducing me to himself. And so he used this business. So I would just have just enough money coming in to pay the bills, and he would allow a building to cancel. And within 30 days, I had to have another building come in, or else I wasn't going to be able to pay the bills. Now, I quit my job. It was working in accounting at a bank. With no money coming in, I was so miserable, and I had this idea of starting the cleaning business. And so I just quit. And I'd like to say that was because I had this tremendous faith that God was going to provide, but I don't know. I think it was desperation. And I was so, like, just miserable. And the first week, you know, I quit my job. First week, I go out, I'm just talking to buildings, and God provided three buildings that first week. And that was enough money to pay the bills, and I'm doing all the work myself. So we go through 3 years of this happened so many times, of building canceling, God providing another one out of the blue. It was never something I could take credit for. It wasn't like I just went out to 30 buildings that next week and one of them said, oh yeah, sure, we need a cleaning service. It was always something I couldn't take credit for. Some building would call me and I'm like, I haven't even talked to you. How'd you even find my phone number? You know, how'd you get, you know, or a friend would recommend a place to go, or it just was always something crazy. And it got to the point to where I would lose a building and I would get excited because I'm like, I'm about to see God show out. I'm going to see a miracle happen.
Were you in a place right now that you were saying God is doing these things, or are you thinking, hey man, it's paying off. I've been working hard. You know,
it was totally. I mean,
you acknowledge this as God?
Yeah, it was no way to see it any other way. I mean,
okay.
He did things to where it's like I could not take credit for anything. And that just kept happening. And so I came to that place of, wow, this is amazing. God is going to provide something that I don't know where it's coming from, and it's going to be here within 30 days. And so our church had a pledge, or it was a 3-year pledge to pay off the debt of the building. And I heard people share their testimonies of how they had pledged, how God had provided. And I was like, ooh, I want to do that. Now, I'd been tithing, which was big for me. You know, that was like stepping out. I mean, barely had enough money to pay the bills. And, but I'm like, you know, I want to do that. And so I thought, I want to pledge something and have one of the, you know, I want to see God do for me what he's done for some of these other people. And I thought, I want to pledge enough that it's impossible for me to have done it. that doesn't even make sense. And so I literally had maybe $20 left over at the end of the month at this point. And I didn't hear any audible stuff. I was like, what seems impossible? And just $800 a month kind of coming into my head. And I thought, okay, that $800 a month for 3 years, that's $28,800. And right now I literally have maybe $20 left at the end of the month. And so, all right, I'm gonna pledge that. So the first year comes and goes, nothing happened. No money towards the $28,800. Right at the start of the second year, I had canceled my medical insurance. I was going to switch policies, and I thought, I never get sick. I'm 25 years old at the time. I'll just save a little money. I just won't get another policy for a few months. I end up in the hospital, had to have my spleen taken out, and so I end up over $20,000 in debt. Mm. So here I am in the second year. I'm like, oh my goodness, I don't have any money toward my pledge. And now I'm in debt over $20,000. So this looks really, way more impossible. And God had provided a second business at this point, and it was with air purifiers. So over the next year, he did provide for business to just kind of kept increasing. And I was able to pay off the medical bills, which, that was a miracle.
Yeah.
I mean, that was more money than I'd ever seen come in. But I got to 6 months left with the pledge for the $28,000. I had nothing toward that $28,000, and he provided the entire amount in the next 6 months. So this was the end of June of 1997. And so I am just, as you can imagine, blown away. I'm like, wow, this is huge. I cannot believe he just provided all this. Well, I wrote a check to the church, and about a week later, this Dateline NBC, they did a story on these air purifiers and basically said, these things might kill you. And as you can imagine, business just disappeared. So it was like God saying, I'm going to put a big emphasis on this. I provided you with that $28,000, and now I'm just turning off the faucet. And it's interesting, I didn't sell another air purifier after that. So my attitude was, okay, great, that's over. That was my one big test, and we're done. Now everything will be nice and happy and comfortable. And I totally did not learn anything. I was supposed to come out of that time with God will provide for all of your needs according to his glorious riches. I mean, just at peace and full of confidence. It's like, doesn't matter what the circumstances are, he'll take care of me. But I came out fearful. And so he kept, over the next 10 years, he kept reintroducing the wilderness periods. And I would have the financial fallout, and everything would just go horribly wrong and go into debt. And I, at some point, just am like, just quit. I don't want to trust you. I don't, that's hard. I don't want to live this life of having to learn to trust. I just want things to be happy and comfortable and everything going well. And, I'm basically just saying, just change my circumstances. I don't like my circumstances. And I didn't know it at the time, but 15 years later, I know his message was, I love you too much for that. If I change your circumstances, you're never going to change. What's inside will always be there, and you'll always be fearful, and you won't have any trust in me, and we won't have this relationship that I want to have with you. So I ended up in this dark place of, I feel really unloved, abandoned. It seemed like if I prayed, when things did fall apart, it seems like at that point, if I prayed, they got worse. So I just kind of quit praying, and I was just existing. I was just trying to get through every day, and I was on the roller coaster. So if circumstances were good, I was okay. So eventually this God doesn't love me. The enemy started using that. And of course, and now this whole time, for a good 10 to 15 years, not one time did it enter my brain that the enemy was behind stuff. The verse, you know, your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking for somebody to devour, never entered my mind. So the God doesn't love me spilled over into, I don't think my wife loves me. Now, I had no reason at all to think that. None. Nothing had ever changed. But it's the whispering in my ear of, don't think she loves you. Look at what she did. Look at what she didn't do. Look at what she said. Look at what she didn't say. And so, I mean, I'm sinking further into this pit that's just, I mean, it's a dark pit. And so, I obviously, I was miserable to live with. I had a horrible outlook on everything. And so, this is going on up until 2019. And it all changed because she prayed for me. She felt like I had this spirit of abandonment. And I didn't even know what that was. I didn't either.
It was new information to me. I had heard that language, that wording a few weeks before and listening to a teaching on different spirits that could, from the enemy.
Demonic spirits
that could.
Call it what it is.
Yes, a demonic spirit that could affect your life because he was believing the lies he was listening to that gave that enemy the authority in his life because he was listening to it. I just heard someone say that was a thing to have a spirit of abandonment. And as I heard those words, just the Lord highlighted it in my mind of like, that's what's going on there. Like that's what we're going to pray about. And I thought,
and we had no experience with praying over these things. You know, I went to a fantastic church doctrinally, but not a church that really talked that much about the spirit realm. And
deliverance ministry.
Didn't talk about healing.
Yeah.
Preached on it when it came up in scripture, believed in healing, but it was never something I saw practiced. I never heard testimonies of anybody being healed of anything, whether it was deliverance or cancer or, you know, any kind of sickness or whatever. So all this is like, I'm clueless.
Very, very common in traditional denominational churches in the country. I think it's most of our experience, quite honestly.
Right.
Yeah, totally agree.
This is interesting, though. So I'm just kind of trying to big picture everything for you. You early on observed God providing out of nowhere for you. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Jesus breaking the bread and feeding suddenly 5,000 people. He's like, he's just providing. I don't know how it's happening, but it's just happening. I'm full and this is great. And I didn't have anything a few minutes ago and now I do. But as time went on, maybe it's a man thing. Maybe it's an American thing. I don't know where we've got to make sure we are controlling our own future so that we can live the life we would like to live with the comfort level. And it sounds like you grabbed that control. And then when things didn't always pan out like they did before, it was like, well, why is God not providing? And it sounds like in the heavenlies, God saying, well, because you started being God. And you started doing this instead of me. I'd like to do that, but I'm not going to wring it out of your hands. You need to trust. I want you to trust me. I want you to feel the joy, experience the joy of trusting me and letting me be God and you be you and follow where I tell you to go. And for us, it's like, okay, that sounds good, but I can't see you. And I don't know if that was just luck that happened over those years. And I can't afford to try to be lucky. I got to make things happen. I know that world.
Yeah, you want to just make sure every month things are going the way you want them to go, and him wanting me to learn that I could walk through any circumstance with perfect peace, perfect joy, perfect contentment, no matter what that was. But, you know, I had to just relinquish everything. And, you know, and of course, you know, the battle that we face every day is right here. It's in between our ears.
Certainly.
And I, you know, that's where the enemy was just assaulting me with all these negative thoughts. And, you know, in Romans 12, take every thought captive. I wasn't taking every thought captive at all. I was
no, we buy just, the lie. Yeah, we buy completely. The lie. The lie he presents, he's a liar. He's been a liar from the beginning.
Yeah.
That's what Jesus says. And so we buy the lie. He offers us lies to buy. And suddenly you bought the lie. Look at this. God providing for you. He did do it before, but he's not providing for you now. Yeah. He's abandoned
and
you.
Yeah, he just... And he wants your life to be miserable. I mean, that's what I thought. I was like, you don't want me to be happy. You just want to keep putting me in these miserable situations. And I just, you know, it was just the snowball. I'd start thinking one wrong thought, which would lead to 10 more and blow them out of proportion. And so there's plenty of people on the planet that have been through so much worse things than I
sure.
experienced.
But that's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about here is we are talking about buying the lie, even for a second.
Yeah.
And when we stay in that place for a little bit, and we don't immediately turn back to God, if you talk to people in deliverance ministry, when we stay in that place, we are essentially in a place of complicit sin, where we begin to think these thoughts about God. And in a negative way. And it could be, you talk to anybody, and it's unforgiveness is a big deal too. And so when you linger in that place, effectively, that's leaving the door open to your house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all the bugs, because you leave the door open long enough, and you're going to have flies and mosquitoes, maybe a bird or two, if you stay there long enough, leave it open for a few weeks. And you're not the only ones living in that house. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of other things living in that house. And it happens to us spiritually. When that door stays open, we give the spirit of abandonment. It's a demonic personality. It's mm-hmm. not a momentum thing. It's an actual real personality, as I think you've discovered mm-hmm. in this time. And maybe you knew before that. But I don't think people get that. And so you leave the door open, and they come in and settle in, and it happens. And the way you think and some of your tendencies change, and you begin to display behavior that you wish you didn't display, but you can't help it because it's almost compulsive at this time. Mm-hmm. Does that ring a bell?
It seems very real. It seems so real.
Yeah.
Like whatever the lie is that you are listening to, if you get in that space, it seems... It's almost like someone else has to tell you that, or you have to somehow recognize from the outside that's not, because inside your head, the lies are so loud that it's easy
to stay there. Because she could do everything perfectly.
Yeah.
And I would still feel so unloved. And
yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, you're talking about leaving the door open. Well, her just praying over me, commanding this spirit of darkness to leave.
So she did a deliverance session with you. So you
a simple prayer.
Yeah.
Just
deliverance
leave.
Sessions yes. don't have to be something like you see out of the movies. Yeah. Right? Yes. That's not really what they necessarily are.
Nothing spectacular happened, but the evidence was there
so that
the next
the door.
Day.
So God gave you this a mm-hmm. couple of weeks before.
Yes.
And you can hear it on a podcast or read it in a book or hear it in a sermon. He's like, I might try that. I don't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. But if that's the truth, seems like it checks out in Scripture, how about I give it a shot here? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because if he's being a jerk all the time because of this blaming you for not loving him, even though you're doing nothing really differently, but he's seeing it through a different set of lenses, it's real easy for you then, as the partner, as the spouse, to leave your own door open and allow some bitterness and resentment to creep in. And suddenly those guys are setting up shop there. Mm. And so the master plan of dividing you, busting up the family, taking you both further from God, could get executed. But God gave you in this time, he like gave you the answers to the test and said, hey, check this out. And you were obedient and said, hey, we're going to do this. And so you prayed a prayer of deliverance over him. How did that go down? I'm super interested in this.
I'm going to back up and say that in the dark times, when he was in his dark place, I went to one as well.
Sure.
The culture of the home at that time, then I thought everything would be so much better spiritually for all of us. Like, he's going to ruin everything for everybody if he doesn't change. And so I thought it was so far gone that God couldn't change him. That's showing my lack of faith of what was the better plan. But I just didn't know how in the world God was going to do it or could do it. But so around 2016, I had a knowing in my head. I just knew, I heard the words clear as day. It was December of 2016 on Christmas Eve. He'll be a different man next Christmas. And I thought, I knew it was the Lord saying it. And I believed it, but also kind of thought, that's a long time. That's a long time to have to wait. The next Christmas Eve, he had not yet changed. But that January, January 2018, I went to a church service where a woman prayed over me, and she said that she saw me walking through a fire that was a spiritual battle, and that spiritual battle was not mine, and I was untouched by it. So that next year, the year of 2018, I went through that year when he said, "You don't love me," and you know, and we'd have the arguments of what I did do or didn't do that showed or didn't show love, or how he felt rejected. I didn't take it personally anymore. I realized this is a spiritual battle and it's not mine. And I began to change how I prayed. I prayed into him. I prayed, I made a whole list that was, he would pray powerful prayers, that he would be giving and loving. I just read it the other day, but I had a list and I would declare, they were declarations, but they were things that just poured out all in one sitting from the Lord. And I'd go back and edit things as I'd think about them sometimes, but I would pray those things over him. In January of 2019 is when, a few weeks before we prayed the prayer, God highlighted that it was a spirit of abandonment. And because I guess at that time I did kind of know that deliverance was a thing. It wasn't, I did not know as much as I do now. I just knew that that was something that could happen. And when he was explaining different spirits, so I get different personalities in the teaching I was listening to, and he said that one, it just highlighted and that's what he's got. So within a week or two, we were on a trip, and on our way home, there was a discussion in the car a long time, and it came to a place where he was beginning to soften. He was beginning to listen. I could see the scales falling off of his ears and his eyes, where things I could say, he actually heard them. There was just a shift going on. And so I felt the yes right now, he'll receive this, say it. And so I told him, and sitting in the sitting in the driveway of our house in our car, I said, okay, you're going to think this sounds weird, because I knew this was brand new information to him. It was not so weird to me to say it. It still was, but it was not as weird to me as I knew it was going to be for him. And I said, I think I'm supposed to pray the spirit of abandonment off of you. I said, okay, do you care if I do that? And he was agreeable. And so we just prayed a simple prayer, but he shifted and everything changed.
What did you pray?
Just in the name of Jesus. Oh, no, but it would have just been something very simple of, in the name of Jesus, I command the spirit of abandonment to leave or to be gone from him, something like that. It was taking authority. I was at that time learning of my authority, learning of my identity, learning the power that we're given at salvation. So I was, probably from 2016 all the way to that 2019 or December 2016. So I guess the years of 2017 and the year 2018, I was in my own little spiritual school. I would walk around with headphones on, listening to sermons, or sometimes I had them praying in like later, now that he's changed, he said, that used to bug me. Like, mm-hmm. that used to make me mad when I'd hear sermons on, but now he blasts them more than I do.
So that's, you were supposed to be mad. There was someone residing in you that wanted that to stop. And not only wanted it to stop, but demonic presences cannot tolerate scripture, worship music. There's a lot of things that are sermons, all that kind of stuff. It is like somebody clanging. They can't be around that. It makes mm-hmm. them crazy. Mm. That's a common thing that I've heard. But bigger here that I hope many people hear and understand is that when this was going on, God gave you eyes to see that this was not a personal mm-hmm. battle.
Right.
That this was a spiritual battle.
Right.
And when your loved one, when your child, when your spouse, when your parent is doing things that just is grinding you down, and you, it's not a personal battle. In most, I would say as a Jesus follower, you know, about every case, pretty mm-hmm. much every case,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
that it is a spiritual battle. And when you stepped off of the personal battlefield and say, hold on,
mm-hmm.
what if I pray for my husband with compassion? What if I pray in taking authority over the things that are attacking him for him?
Mm-hmm.
As his spouse, as his caretaker, as his companion, as the person who loves him. And I turn this into, and I recognize this as a spiritual battle and take spiritual battle action. And you did, and it changed.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen that in my marriage. I have seen that in my relationship with my kids. I have heard it in the landscape of spiritual people. Our reaction when he's being a jerk, or when she's being a jerk, or she's not, is to be short with them, is to cut them down, is to be critical, is to get in a fight, is to get our point across. It's to win the personal battle,
mm-hmm.
and we gotta be more mature than that, and we've gotta recognize that it's a spiritual battle, and we can take spiritual action, and it is only when we take spiritual action that it truly gets uprooted and cleansed.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah.
I have found. I mean, we can go to therapy and counseling and all that stuff until we're blue in the face, and there are good things that come from that. Mm-hmm. If there are Christian counselors, they understand the spiritual component in the spiritual battle and will lead you in that as well.
Knowing what I know now, if we were ever to go to a counselor, it would have to be one that was not only just a Christian, but also believed in deliverance, because
mm-hmm.
and can recognize where there's a personality that doesn't belong in the marriage is present.
This is a huge deal. And I'm just going to be honest with you, Kirk. I experienced my own transformation from one version of Stacy into a different version of Stacy. That was the hand of God delivering me from an awful version of myself.
Mm.
Ask my wife. She'd be like, mm-hmm. That's right.
So we have something in common.
And similar thing happened with her. And all that came through prayer. And all of it came through prayer, really. And so I think we could just have a conversation around the family and spiritual battles versus personal battles, and this would be what it is, which is awesome, and we may just need to do that sometime. I think it's so healthy, and it may be a book that you need to write. I don't know, but it's so good. So you felt like the fire that was coming was, if you, as you look back on it, was Kirk's continued...
I was in the fire. Like, I was in the fire.
In your marriage.
Yes, already at that point, yes.
Gotcha.
So the first time she prayed that was beginning of 2018.
2019.
And things changed drastically.
Immediately.
I'd been in this, you know, darkness for probably at least 10 years with God doesn't love me.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably for at least 4 or 5 years with my wife doesn't love me. And just in that instant, everything changed.
Yep.
Immediately.
So cool.
And so 2019, completely different. At the very beginning of 2020, I had a little bit of a slip back into the getting lied to again, and maybe said a couple of things that was, you know, and feeling a little hurt by something I shouldn't have felt hurt by. So she prayed same thing over me again. And so then, and this was January 2020, and this was just within 2 or 3 weeks, we were about to enter this journey with
amazing.
Frank.
Amazing, mm-hmm. Because so, you know, once you do the deliverance, it's not like done forever.
Mm-hmm. True.
Because they're
not going to give up.
They go through waterless places looking for a rest, and they think, maybe I can go back. Did this person fill themselves with the Holy Spirit? Are mm-hmm. they connected to God? Is there an opening? Hey, I know where the rooms are over here with Kirk. I'm just going to go back and I'm going to bring my buddies with me.
Yeah.
And he knocked. And he tried to come in there. They tried to come in. I know it sounds crazy. I don't care if it sounds crazy.
Yeah.
It's just, I've seen it too many times. Yeah. Right before the diagnosis hits. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because if they can work their way in right before the diagnosis hits, mm-hmm. they're going to take your marriage out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it's unimaginable to think if I would have been in that terribly dark place and then we find out mm-hmm. my son has cancer. I don't think I would have ever recovered. You know, I mean, it just feels like that would have been the final blow that would have taken me out.
That wasn't an accident.
Yeah, exactly. So, so when we start this journey with Frank, I am in a completely different place, but I'm still in a place of, I don't feel the confidence to pray over him. I don't feel like it was still struggling with, I don't feel like my prayers are getting past the ceiling. Felt very inadequate. But I was light years from where I was.
Yeah, you're just not super, you're not as comfortable on this rock as somebody.
Yeah.
So that's where we are. Because the question was, where were you in your faith when we kind of get this diagnosis here? And you've given us a backstory. It's like, hey, I was emerging into or re-emerging into a connection with God that mm-hmm, I had that true. Had been severed
yeah.
by this spirit of abandonment for a long time that was really threatening our marriage. But
yeah,
because you asked the question, were you on the rock? And I'm like, yes, we were. And then he went into a speech. I was like, I was. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's right.
So God had been preparing her, you know, through everything. And even through this praying with authority. And that was significant for the journey ahead of her recognizing, oh, yeah, this is what we're going to do. And so she was the one that would always pray over him out loud.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you go. I'm very happy to let you do that. And because, again, I felt completely inadequate to do that at that point.
She has experience, but you, as a reconnected believer, have every bit of that authority that Jesus mm-hmm. has given you. Mm-hmm. You just don't walk, you're not walking confidently because you just haven't seen it yet. She's starting to see it, and so she has the experience.
Right. I had already seen God do something amazing. Mm-hmm. Right. So I had evidence more in my own, and God and I got real close during those years, and he was my best friend. He was the confidant I had during all that time. Yeah. So therefore,
your faith has been built by seeing his movement and activity in your life. When we see it, that's why we do this podcast. People get to witness what has happened in other people's lives, and it builds faith. And mm-hmm. when faith gets built, we begin to step out in faith. And when we step out in faith, we see amazing things happen, which builds our faith, which causes us to step out in faith. And next thing you know, you're talking to God all the time, because why would I not? He's right there. Right. So cool.
Yeah.
All of it's so cool. So where we are now is now Frank has gotten this diagnosis, and you guys were in a really shaky place just weeks before, and now I wouldn't say you're out of the shaky place, but you're you've grabbed the lifeline and you're...
Well, yeah, he had a whole year to grow.
Yeah.
That whole, all of 2019, some of those sermons that I listened to that made him mad, he started listening to those. Yeah, I'd start him stuff that, you know, God had either, as I listened to it, I thought, oh, Kurt needs to hear that. I remember I had them saved in my playlist on YouTube, and I could send it to him and say, why don't you listen to that, this one and that one? And I knew the things he needed to hear. And he'd listen to his own stuff. He started reading a whole lot of books. You already did that, but it was more so. But
before I went into this dark place, I had taken seminary classes. I had memorized books of the Bible. I spent tons of time in Bible study. I loved it. I loved listening to sermons. So I had 10 or 15 year period then of that, you know, deteriorating and not having much of anything. And so then I'm falling in love with it again.
The demonic presence doesn't necessarily have you endorsing the things of hell. It's more like, I see it affects your vision. And so it's like I find when these things happen, it's almost like, my windshield got cleaned. And I was like, whoa, okay, I can see clearly now. And and I think that's a little bit of how, I don't want people to think, okay, demonic influence, does that mean, you know, I'm secretly chanting things at night? No, it's just a film that gets, it's confusion. It's bits of fear, and it's not reasonable. It's like, I know that doesn't make sense, but I still feel it. And it's those kinds of things that I think it's like a film that deliverance takes place. It's like, oh, why am I suddenly happy when I used to be frustrated all the time? I don't understand that. That's what that is. So, so now you got to deal with this.
Yeah. So I think we had several people that had encouraging things that they had either felt like God had told them or prayed for us. And the first big thing for me was her sister had a friend of hers that she called to tell what's going on for her to pray for Frank. And this lady, she's in her car driving while her sister is telling her. And her sister's named Cindy. So Cindy gets through telling her what's going on. And the lady says, well, while I was driving, I saw the number 43 on this gas station sign. And she said, the reason that's significant is I went to a healing conference. It was a Randy Clark conference. Mm. Now, at this point, I didn't have a clue who Randy Clark was, didn't know anything about a conference or anything at all. But she said, that night on the way to the conference, God told me the number 43 was going to be significant in my life. And she said, so that night at the conference, at the end of everything, we had two sides of the room, and there were 43 healings on the left side and 43 healings on the right side. And she said, God spoke to me and said, whenever you see the number 43, it's going to mean complete and total healing. And so she tells Cindy this, and Cindy tells us that. And I'm like, wow. Oh, that is so encouraging, you know? And I'm...
So this woman's driving down the road. Mm-hmm. Cindy, your sister, calls her, tells her to ask her to pray for Frank. Mm-hmm. She rides by a gas station during the conversation and sees the number 43, and she believes that that was God telling her there would be a healing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Okay, now, I'm a spiritual person. I'm like, there's something to that. If I'm not a Jesus follower, I'm an atheist, I'm like, give me a break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
True.
Right, and so I hear you, and so I want to continue with that. That's
well, fine. And of course, you know, at this point, I'm grasping for anything.
Absolutely, sure.
Well, the crazy thing was, another month or two goes by, and one day I'm like, "What was that story again about the lady in 43?" I mean, I've completely forgotten what it was, and so she had to tell me the story again. I'm like, "Oh yeah," I was like, "Wow, okay." Wow, that's so encouraging. And I was just needing to hear, you know, these things over and over, and somehow they're slipping out of my head. You know, I don't know. I guess there's just so much going on at this point that it's just so hard to keep things straight and think straight. And, you know, we didn't think anything else about it other than, oh, that's encouraging. Well, I don't know, probably 6 months goes by, and all of a sudden she tells me, I'm seeing the number 43, like several times.
Mm-hmm.
Christy is seeing it. And I'm like, wow, well, that's amazing. And, you know, and I don't remember exactly, say, at the very beginning, how many times she had seen it when she told me this. Well, then not much more time goes by, and I start seeing it. And the significant part of that was I never felt like God wanted to communicate with me at all. I just, you know, I felt in that such a dark place. I was like, I'm just not that important. And him showing me these number 43s was just him going, you know, I see you. Mm. I love you. I want this relationship with you. I want you to know my thoughts. And so this didn't just happen like once a day or once a week or whatever. It started happening multiple times a day, 10, 15, 20 times a day. He would show us the number 43 to where it was almost like, you got to be kidding me.
It wasn't. It was beyond wishful thinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, I bought a red car. Now I see red cars everywhere. It wasn't right. That.
It would show up in just the most bizarre ways and in the most simple ways, just looking at a clock. But it would be like some days, every hour you look up at the clock and it's 43.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at your phone and it's 43% charged. And
we would pause a book that we're listening to. And the minute, one of them, I want to say I paused it to answer the phone. And I want to say it was for him. And when I looked back, I said, you're not going to believe it. When I paused my book I'm listening to answer the phone. I guess maybe I didn't pause it because the phone would have, the call would have made it pause. But it was at 43 minutes and 43 seconds.
So it was not showing out.
It's not insignificant. It's, here's the thing I've discovered with that. When coincidences are new, they're neat coincidences. There comes a time in your life where you're experienced enough to say, there's something more going on here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just thinking that coincidences are spiritual. I'm starting to see a pattern that is intelligent, that it's not just, wow, another coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just don't want people to think, you know, you can't just think every coincidence is a move of God. And I'm not saying that necessarily is the case. There's just a point that you get to that, mm-hmm, you begin to recognize something more is happening. And it's not like we're getting dumber. Yeah. It's like we're getting more mature. We're getting more experience. We're getting smarter. And that's when these things become, you begin to recognize them for what they are.
Mm-hmm.
So cool. So you're seeing 43 all over.
And it went on for the next year. Every day between the two of us, there were probably some days it would be 20 or 30 times. And we'd take screenshots, we'd take pictures. And so it was just overwhelming. And I remember thinking, okay, this is like with the Israelites going through the wilderness and God's there with in a cloud by day and fire by night. And they could see him, his presence, through that constantly. And I felt like that was him just doing that for us. Is like every hour, every 30 minutes, whatever, of the day, I'm going to remind you that I'm here and I see you and I'm with you and I love you. And it was, you're not going to be able to get away from me. I'm going to overwhelm you with my presence.
Now, that's cool. So that, him letting you know that he is with you in this time,
right,
is a big deal. But the woman, when she got this message from God for herself, associated it with healing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So you could take that as, oh my gosh, he's not just with us. He's telling us that Frank is going to be fully healed.
Yeah. That's what we were thinking and expecting.
So Frank, where is Frank's faith?
Okay, when we went to the doctor and they told us it was a 20% chance of it working.
Yeah.
And that was just for giving him 5 years. There were the drugs that he would take would have given him a chance of developing other cancers and heart problems and things like that. But that day, hearing, I want to say it was our first, let me lay it all out for you, kind of a meeting that we had with the doctor. Either when we got in the car or we went straight to my parents' house after that to tell them what the doctors had said, sitting on my parents' couch, he said, they said that the medicine had 20% chance of working. And Frank and my dad looked at each other and they said 20% because they would go fish. I'm going to get emotional for this. They were best friends. My dad and Frank were best friends. And I'm crying for knowing what my dad's heart feels like, but he misses him so much. They would go fishing often, and I want to say more than one time, but for sure one time, they planned to go fishing. There was a 20% chance of rain, and if there was 20% chance of not raining, maybe then it would always rain. I forget, but it was like, 20% meant it's going to happen. And so they looked at each other like 20%, like it's going to work. Like that's enough. That's all we need. He was strong. He believed that God would heal him the entire time, the entire time. I'm sure there were moments. We all had moments at different times, and we were there for each other to be able to build each other up in our faith of, no, God's promised healing. You know, his word says he, you know, heals all or forgives all of our sins and heals all of our diseases. So, you know, all means all. This is going to happen. I had a whole list of verses, if any verse in the Bible that had the word healing in it. I had printed it out and had it saved on a document on my phone. I had two documents, one that was just the actual verse. One I had changed where it entered his name. So we were declaring that verse over him. It would take me over an hour to read them all to him. But at times when he would have to be in the hospital, he'd say, read the verses. And I'd just sit there by him and read all those verses. And it would take a good hour. And sometimes that's how he'd fall asleep. I do remember there being times where when you were talking about taking authority and praying and commanding and knowing when we pray that we have authority over something. One of the pills that he took really bothered his stomach. It would give him a nauseous feeling because he never did take the chemo, but he did take a palliative pill. So it would hold it was supposed to make the cancer not grow so fast and maybe even knock it back a bit. And it did. But it also bothered his stomach. So, he would just tell me, he's like, will you come pray for my stomach? And we could pray and command and it would go away immediately. Every time. I remember him one time calling me. We had gone on a day trip to Stone Mountain and he didn't go with us. He stayed back. But he called me to say, my stomach's hurting and it's not going away. I just want you to pray. So I, over the phone prayed. But then I also said, you do it. Like you take authority. And I just, wanted him to take, he kept relying on me to be authoritative. But at the same time, I'm sure if I were in his shoes, like I would want somebody else to do the praying. I do. When I feel like, okay, I feel like the enemy's attacking me, I don't want to pray myself. I want somebody else to do it. Even though I know I have the full authority to say it. It's typical, and that's a human thing to want someone else to do the praying for you. But every time,
and that's good. But sometimes I find that we don't pray in that authority over ourselves, and we keep putting it off and putting it off, and maybe somebody else. And you're right. We each need to take that authority and exercise it. Because when we do, it builds our faith. When we take that authority and cast out, and we, especially when we see that, the fruit of that. Yeah, a lot of times I found myself, and I'm a person who not only believes in this, but have practiced this for some time now in my own family and over myself. And there'll be times that several days will have gone by. I was like, so why have you not just gone ahead and taken that authority and prayed that out? What are you waiting on?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're waiting on a 3-hour window instead of a 20-minute. What are you waiting on?
Yeah.
Do you need to do that after dinner? Why do you push that out? And I feel like that's the thing. So I think that was a really good advice. But also as a mom, I think there's something about mama praying over me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So sorry, go ahead.
His faith was in a place where he believed the entire time, God's going to heal me. It's going to be fine. Like,
how long between diagnosis and August 5th of 21.
He was diagnosed February of 2020 and died August 2021.
August 20th?
August 5th, 2021.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
About a year and a half.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you think he was going to be healed? Oh, truly?
Yes. Oh, yes.
We did. The entire time. I mean, we were... And I think that, you know, thankfully, that was a lot of his faith staying strong, was we kept speaking that over him, and we kept pointing to the 43s, and we're like, look how awesome God is. He just keeps showing us this. And so, of course, now I you know, typical human being, you know, if you told me for sure anytime before 2020 I would go through this, I would have sworn I will never recover. And there would be the moments, just little fleeting moments, because as we went through this, you know, I became, you know, acquainted with the, I know the enemy is going to try to whisper all the lies. And I realized really quickly, for years, if I said, what if? I'm like, okay, if it starts with what if, that's from the enemy. There's never a, what if God does the miraculous? What if God heals? It's, what if things don't go well? What if everything falls apart? What if my son dies? And, you know, so there'd be just a little 10-second blip of, what if this happens, Kirk? And, you know, and I'd think, oh my goodness, if God doesn't heal, am I going to be okay? Are my kids going to be okay? Mm-hmm. You know, the other five, or is their faith going to be destroyed if God doesn't heal him? And so I very quickly just shoved that right out. Nope, not letting that thought in. And so that's, you know, I mean, probably at least two or three months in from that point on, and for sure after God started showing us the 43s, our faith just kept increasing and increasing and getting stronger. I mean, the last week of his life, obviously, things were looking way worse each day, and it didn't change our belief. We were like, okay, God, I guess you're just going to do this, and it's going to be more miraculous than what we thought it was going to be. And that just, you know, there was, by that point, I just don't think there was any doubt at all. So
somewhere early July, it was after the 4th, but probably the week after that, somewhere early July is when his oxygen level dropped at home. So I took him to Children's, and he needed to stay overnight or two to be on oxygen. And at that point, they said, we're sending you home on hospice and on oxygen. So we had to have hospice nurses come to our house, and I had to sign things. He had to sign things also in the hospital to say, like, you know, we won't resuscitate, that kind of thing. So it was all end of life beginnings talks, but I sat there and told those nurses, complete straight face with full faith, no, God's going to heal him. He'll be fine. Like, you're just here to help him during this time right now, because he needs support breathing, but this is not end of life. This is just helping him right now. And they were, I don't know if it was just their training or if they were like in the same believing with me, but they, without batting an eye, you know, wanted to, you know, be in our home. When Lady even talked about, I want more kids and dogs because of just being in our home and the joy that she felt being in there, because we weren't in fear. We were in still full faith and belief and joy, knowing God's going to miraculously do something. I'll say that now, but he was going to heal our son.
Well, and so what, 6 months before, God starts just putting this in Christy's heart of praying for resurrection.
No, not 6 months before. Six weeks.
6 weeks. Oh, 6 weeks.
Oh,
yeah.
Or less.
So,
oh, okay.
In the last 6 weeks, you begin to grapple with
probably the healing
looking different.
Right, and sometime in June.
So, like, of him passing away and then a resurrection from yes. the dead.
Yes, I felt the Lord kind of say that in my spirit. And I thought, no, I don't like that plan because that means he has to die. And I think I'd be scared. And I almost felt like God was asking me in a way of like, well, let's push you. Let's push your faith a little further and let's pray that. And I thought, I feel like that lets the enemy win, though. No, I don't like that plan. But I just knew he was asking me to do that. Like, my place of obedience was going to be to pray resurrection over him.
And
I did Cindy not like that plan.
That oh, yeah. Well, way back before that.
She felt it a good bit before, but God then raised it back up in her mind around the same time that he's even planting it in my heart at all.
So her sister
yeah.
had God just put that on her heart.
Yeah.
And they never talked about it.
No. In fact, the conversation when she did try to bring it up the first time, she said, I need to ask you something. She said, I need to ask if you'd be okay with this, but I need your permission to ask you this question. Just how she worded it, something like that. And I knew what she was going to ask me. She was going to ask me, hey, what if we had to pray resurrection? I knew she was going to say that. Mm. But I didn't want it, even those words to come out loud. And so I said, you don't have my permission. I know what you're going to ask me and you don't have my permission to ask me. And she respected that boundary. I want to say within a day or two, we're on a phone call again. And she said, cause we talked a lot during this whole journey. At some point, a day or so later, she said, listen, I know I asked your permission if I could ask a question and you said no, but I feel like we need to, you know, not be scared to say what we're both thinking. And she said, let's get on the same page because that's going to be important, that our faith is at the place, you know, to do what we would need to do in that situation. I was like, fine. So she said out loud, she's like, what if we had to pray resurrection? What are your thoughts on that? And where's your faith on that? And I said, God's already told me I'm already there. And she had already talked to my mom, who my mom walks with the Lord, but this would not be something that I would just think that my sister could have that conversation with her and her say, yeah, sure, let's pray. Like without being like, no, that's weird or whatever. God had already laid it on my mom's heart as well, that that's where we were going to, what we would be doing.
So let me ask you this. Might get into sticky territory here.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do, just say, Stace, nope. But was your hope in all of this tied directly or almost exclusively to Frank remaining on this earth?
Well, okay, I can answer that with... I mean, that obviously that's what we were expecting. And I just did not have a doubt. And that led into, after he passed, I didn't have a doubt that he was going to be resurrected. I mean, I was just confident of that. But 2 or 3 days before he passed, I'm getting alone with God to pray. And I said, okay, I believe you're going to heal him. So I feel like I'm cheating here. Because I feel like you're going to do that. But I want you to know, if you don't, I will follow you wherever you want to go, wherever you want to take me. I am not going back to that darkness that I was in for so long because I didn't trust you. And you do whatever you need to do. And you have my heart. And I feel like that. Really? I don't know. I mean, there's no way to know for me, but I feel like that was where what God eventually did possibly really changed with me. Because I ended up at a place to where after he passed, you know, I'm like expecting resurrection, and then that didn't happen. And I had such a peace. The next day, I was like, he's with Jesus. He's happy. He is, I mean, beyond happy. You know, there's no way we can even imagine it. And I'm like, I'm fine with that. I'm good. You know, I'm just imagining him in heaven. And I thought it was, you know, the email you sent us, you said, you know, I just, it, seems like that's a hole that doesn't get filled until we're with Jesus in heaven, with Frank. And I had used that exact phrasing in the past several months of, I said, it is so unexplainable what God did with me. It's like he filled that hole. It's like the hole of emptiness. He just completely filled it. And I'm not, it's almost like I'm not able to be sad. It's just not possible. And that was just with me. I mean, that, you know, that was my experience. Now, I don't know that, again, I don't know if it went back to that prayer of, I will follow you wherever you want to go. Your plan is perfect. And if I could change it, I would screw it up. And so I don't know if that was like the key that unlocked the door, but I just, you know, I mean, of course I missed him. And in the first few months, I would have moments of feeling a little sad.
Sure.
And yeah, I mean, obviously. But it just didn't, I mean, and even if that happened, it only lasted for a few seconds. And I'm like, God, I know you have your peace and your joy that you've promised me, and you want to fill me with that. And it would just go away. And it was so miraculous that the year or 2 year mark when we're at the beach?
Two.
So two years
this in, last August.
We're at the beach on August 5th. And I hadn't thought about August 5th. I didn't think about it the week before, the month before. So the day of, I'm out on the beach. And I'm actually praying for people out on the beach. And I come back up to the pool, and she says, she talked to our daughter, and she's feeling a little sad, and she's going to come, her and her now husband, we're going to come down and stay with us that night at the beach. And she said, then I talked to Elise, which was a girl Frank was dating during this time. They knew each other for 4 or 5 months, and she's doing okay. And I'm like, I'm looking at her like, what are you talking about? Why is our daughter sad? And why is Elise okay? You know, I'm like, what's going on? And she looks at me with this disbelief of, it's August the 5th. And I'm like, so? What's August the 5th got to do with it?
It hadn't hit you yet.
No.
Yeah.
It didn't
hit you. Here's what I hear when you talk that way. And maybe you were awake. The story is you were awakened from it, and then you got sad the rest of the day. And it doesn't sound like that was the story.
No, not at all.
But that's really kind of where I'm going with this line here. All I can do. So I have gotten in this water with people several times, but it's not been my water. Okay. So all I can do is try to imagine my child and my experience if that were him or her. And my initial thought in response is an overwhelming emotional devastation that I wouldn't be able to breathe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But as my faith has grown, as I've learned more about and seen God in action, and the thing things I've experienced and the things that I heard other people, getting to sit in this chair across from people like you, I've learned so many unbelievable things that I just didn't understand before. Heaven is real, and it's greater than we know, and greater than we can imagine, and greater than we can think. And quite honestly, the goal is heaven.
Right.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Because that's eternity, and it's eternity with God in a saturated presence that is indescribable in its love and beauty and every other thing. I want my kids in heaven. And I don't want them in there soon. I want to be there. And so I guess what I'm saying is I see people go into deep, dark places, experiencing what you experience because of the sentimentality, this notion that their life is over, they are gone forever, I will never see them again, I won't be sitting as a proud mom watching him get mm-hmm. married and being his best man and holding his child, my grand, all the things that are just the emotion that comes with this profound, most difficult thing I think that can happen on earth, loss. But there's heaven and there is Jesus and he is real. And I just, the question that started was the only hope his continued life on this earth? Did you find any hope in the celebration of his presence in heaven?
Not until after he was there.
And I don't know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I've not been in your shoes, and I'm not asking for it, that's for sure. And I'm not judging, or I'm trying to pull from you how you navigate these waters mm-hmm. of undescribable pain emotionally at the loss of your son, while also considering heaven. And when you talk about, Kirk, the things that you're talking about and this peace that I know that you have now, because we're able to talk about these things right now and you're not destroyed, it truly is, I hear in my spirit as you're saying, it's like, death, where is your sting?
Yeah.
That was what we called our, we got together with friends to share Frank's story and what all we'd gone through a few months after he died. And that was what we called the night, Death, Where's Your Sting?
Well, that's probably going to be the name of this episode. that just happened. So I didn't know that.
Well, I think his peace, like he said, he woke up the next morning and just knew it's okay. He's with Jesus. And I don't want to take him from that. I was not there.
Yeah.
When I woke him up, I was actually mad. And then I wasn't mad that he wasn't mad with me and going to try to help, because what was going on was, when he died, I was right there with him, and the nurse, one of the hospice nurses, was there with me. Now, Frank had asked me, it was a Thursday morning when he died. And on Tuesday night, he asked me in the middle of the night, what happens if I die? He asked me that question, and I said, I got right in his face, and I said, then I'm going to pray you back. This is going to be this is a battle, and I'm going to win, and I'm going to pray you back. And he just went right back to sleep. Like, it was like, okay, that checked that question mark off for him. I told his nurse the next morning that he had asked me that, because she wanted to know, does he realize that he's getting worse? Because with our physical eyes, with our earthly eyes, we could see that he was physically getting worse and that the cancer was winning. So she wanted to know, has he said anything to indicate that he realizes what's going on? And I said, well, I'll tell you what. He asked me last night, what happens if he dies? Because, I'm assuming he realizes, I'm getting weaker. He was weaker, not able to get up out of the bed anymore, that type thing. And I said, and I told him, I'm going to pray him back, and you need to know that's what's going to happen. Like, I'm going to be praying him back. God's already put me on that page. So if he dies, I'm going to pray resurrection over his body. She said, I'll pray with you. And she did. So she happened to be there with me on Thursday morning. And it just blessed my soul. Like, I thought, okay, it's go time. I think I grabbed my phone. My sister wasn't there with me. I grabbed my phone and texted her, I just watched my child take his last breath. Get over here fast. And then I texted one other group, one girl that I knew was texting a group for me to be in prayer. And I knew I could tell them, shift your prayer. My text was shift your prayers from healing now to resurrection. So when my sister got there, we prayed. A couple of people came and prayed with us that were people that she was friends with that we did not even know, but they had the faith for resurrection. They had prayed resurrection with other people before. I think that helped the energy in the room and the house. But for 24 hours, we prayed resurrection. My daughter, my older daughter, came and she prayed with us. At some point in the night, she felt Frank over her shoulder say, I don't want to leave.
Who, your daughter?
My daughter, yes.
So he has passed.
He's passed. This was in the middle of the night.
So this is a good 15, 16 hours after he had passed. So he passed at like 10 o'clock in the morning.
And y'all are, where are you?
This is at our house.
So you kept him at the house.
Yes, he was at
continuing to pray resurrection over him for hours.
Yes.
Many hours after. Yes. Okay. And in this time, your daughter believes she experienced his presence over her shoulder.
Yes.
What do you mean she felt his presence over her shoulder?
I don't know anything other than that. Just like she just felt like Frank was right at her shoulder and said, and like she just felt the words in her heart and her spirit, I don't want to leave. And she just knew he was like communicating to her, I'm with Jesus and I don't want to leave. And so she did not tell me that until the next morning.
Well, hang on. So that night, though.
Oh, yeah.
As they're praying, I mean, there was his, they would put their hand maybe on his arm or leg or whatever as they're praying, and that part of his body would be hot.
Hot?
Well, they'd put their hand on him where, and they'd say, has your hand been here? Because, like, they could feel warmth. And they wanted to know, was it because your hand was here a minute ago, or is it just, am I feeling warmth? At one point, they saw the sheet just like move, and nobody was near his body.
The sheet that was laying across him, like just jumped up off of him. His eyes changed color.
Yeah, we could see his eyes change colors.
So they went from the, you know, the look of death, of gray, to having color.
I don't know how that works.
Right? I know. I'm not a doctor. Encouraged by those things, but at the same time...
The sheet thing, though. What?
I know.
Try to be as accurate with that as you can. So I wasn't
in the room. So my daughter is the one that tells this part of the story, that she was on one side of the bed. He had a hospital bed in the room because the hospice had brought equipment in. So there's a hospital bed, and she's on one side of it on her knees. And she maybe is touching his hand, but she's not up by him. She's down on the lower end, on the floor. And so is the other girl. The other girl's on the other side of the bed. And so they both are just in prayer, and neither of them are up near the body at all.
No, she was laying. She said she had her hands down. Right. She was laying on the beside him with her head kind of laying on her hands.
That's right. So she saw the sheet move, and Zida was on the other side of the bed. And they looked at each other because they both saw it. And they looked at each other and they were like, did you see that? Both of them. So something just moved in the abdomen region.
So it just seemed like Frank's spirit was there. And
there's no way for us to know. Yeah, we just think, was he trying to figure out, do I want to come back or do I not want to come back? Like, that's in our mind, in our imaginations. That's what we wonder. Is that what was going on during the 24 hours that we're praying?
But it was just amazing to know that, you know, there was stuff happening. I mean, all this again was just so new to me. So when she tells me right after she has this impression that God wants her to pray for resurrection, you know, 6 weeks before this, she didn't tell me right away.
No.
And then finally, when she did tell me, I'm like, you got to be kidding. I'm like, here I have. I've been having trust for healing, and I've never seen anybody healed. I've never heard of anybody being healed. You know, and I'm like, maybe God does that in Africa or something, but I don't know of anybody. You know, I just had not come across. Now, of course, since then, I've been like, oh my gosh, it's there's so many.
I'll ask you about that in a minute.
Okay, So I'm like, now we got to trust for resurrection? I'm like, does that even happen? I'm like, I've never heard of, if I haven't heard of healing or experienced it, I'm like, I sure haven't heard of somebody being raised from the dead. And I'm like, can't we just go back to just believing for healing? You know, so I'm like, oh my goodness. I felt like God just kept pushing me into these whole new realms of belief and what he is prepared to do. And so... having the things that happened that night were just amazing to me. I'm like, oh my goodness, that's...
Well, I mean, it's like maybe there is a spiritual realm, right?
Right.
It's kind of when we see a prayer answered, it's like, whoa, that's weird. It's almost like there really is a God.
You know? Yeah.
Like, well, no, these things have been outlined in Scripture and people experience them, just because we haven't, because we've sort of bought this sanitized version of faith and religion that cleans up all that stuff, mm-hmm. and it's just mm-hmm. about the teachings and belief, mm-hmm. that we think, oh, that's not real, is it? And then suddenly something happens, and this podcast is filled with, you're not going to believe what actually happened to me. Yeah. I didn't think this was a real thing, and people maybe think I'm crazy now, but I can only tell you what happened.
Yeah.
And so, in what I've done here, and I read a lot too, and I've studied near-death experiences quite a bit, and I think they are a gift from God. I have recommended and do recommend, if you have not read Imagine Heaven,
he's almost done with it,
from John Burke, it'll begin to change the way you see what goes on when somebody passes away mm-hmm. from this earth, certainly right afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I think you probably, if you've gotten through a good bit of that book, are recognizing some of the things that may have occurred that night in those early hours.
Well, I think it's amazing that Mary Clayton so this whole time, for 2.5 years now, you know, she said, felt Frank telling her, I don't want to come back. Well, I'd never heard of any other experiences of people, you know, like you're talking about in this book.
Mm-hmm.
So in the last 24 hours, as I'm going through this book, and I'm like, oh my goodness, so many people, God presented them with the choice. Do you want to go back? And I'm like, I didn't know that was a thing. So all this time
I don't think it's the thing in all cases, but I do think it's the case in some.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some didn't have a choice, and some just got sent back. But so many had a choice and did choose to come back. And so I'm like, oh my goodness. So this whole time where we've been saying Frank chose to stay, like, I had no basis for that. I didn't know that was anybody else had ever experienced that. And then to hear all these stories in that book of that. So I'm like, wow, that's amazing.
Well, for the ones who have come back, we wouldn't know these things if they had chosen to stay. But you wonder how many did have the choice and say, I'm not going anywhere. Yeah. If I've got a choice, I'm good.
I
wonder Lazarus, if they, you know, when he, if he was like, hey, I've been here for like 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
I got to do what?
Yeah, you're taking
it's
me
the
back,
worst news. Right? Don't unpack your bags, Lazarus.
You gotta, my goodness. Know.
But anyway, but in talking to you before, it sounded like there were other ways that the heavenly realm, God, manifested his presence. I think you maybe said that Frank himself had some visions and some things beforehand, and then certainly the night of, I just need to know about those things.
Okay. The vision that I remember him having, this may have happened in the middle of the day, but he one day told me about a vision that he had just had, like an open vision where he was not sleeping. It was him having a vision, because he said, I looked down at you and I could see that you were there sleeping. So I knew, you know, it's nighttime. I knew I was awake. And he said, if I looked up straight ahead, my vision was happening. But if I looked down at you, it was just, you know, the normal, what's going on in real life around me. He spent 45 minutes recounting to me everything in the vision, wanting me to write it down to make sure it was right. But in his dream, he was in a boat, not dream, sorry, in his vision, he was in a boat. He had boxes around him that were like cargo boxes that had supplies in them. He said, I didn't want to get out of my boat. I felt comfortable and I was happy and I was fulfilled. I was in my boat and I couldn't get out, but I also didn't want to get out. He said, my sister was in front of him, and his boat was moving towards her with other people's boats. And she was at the end and telling people which way to go. He was in the boat, but we were in a room with a big wall between us, and he could hear all of our family on the other side of the wall, and he wanted to be with us because he knew we were doing something important, but he couldn't get out of his boat. Things like that. And I thought, it sounded all so strange to me. It still does. It still doesn't make sense. I'm not a dream interpreter. I don't know people that do that kind of thing. I would love for somebody to say, I've heard people say that the boat can be your ministry. And one day we asked him, could he see angels? And this was when he had not, he wasn't talking as much anymore. But when we said, Frank, do you see angels? He just did like this. And he pointed in front of him, which one of the girls that was with us says she could see in the spiritual realm, and that there was an angel right behind his bed the entire time. But in the mirror, he either was seeing something she didn't straight in front of him, or he was pointing to the reflection in the mirror that would have shown right behind him. But he just pointed right in front of him when we asked him, do you see angels? What's another one? Oh, well, I do want to share his deliverance that I did with him.
Frank's deliverance.
Frank had a deliverance in, I want to say it was Tuesday night. Yes, Monday. So he shifts on Saturday night to where he's not quite as, he's still communicating, but it's just different. He just shifted a little, something shifted somewhere, something on Saturday night. So by Monday morning, two girls from Florida that were friends with my sister drove to just pray with us. Because things have shifted, we're thinking things look a little worse. Like we need more people praying. So the two of them came. She left me with one of the girls that had come, left me with some information about just some demonic personalities that can stick around. And we had just been talking just randomly about this. She ended up mentioning that shame is a personality that it hides, and it's real easy for a Christian to agree with, because it's real easy for them to say, you're so awful that you had this sin in your life or that sin, that you haven't gotten rid of this. It's just easy for a Christian who already feels guilt about their sin to feel then listen to shame and then have shame on their sin. So she said that shame sometimes is a little harder to get rid of because it hides so easily. Well, those words stuck in my head on Tuesday when it's just the two of us there in the room. I was saying out loud these things and like talking to him, even though he's not having a conversation with me. I'm just telling him, and he's just kind of looking forward towards me. But I said something about shame, and all of a sudden he just had this weird look in his eyes when I said it. And I said, you know, I just noticed something when I said that. I was like, do you think you're agreeing with shame? Do you agree with shame? And he had not really been doing a whole lot of strong talking at that point. With a whole lot of strength in his voice, he went, stop it, stop it, stop it. And I said, oh, we're going to pray this away. So I got my sister and the girl that had been at our house the day before on the phone. And she told me, she said, I want to watch his eyes while you're praying, and you just pray. So my sister was not part of, she was just interceding for us. And the girl is telling me what to pray, like to put my hand on him and just tell shame to leave in the name of Jesus, to cast out shame in the name of Jesus. And so I probably said it 3 or 4 times, and he sat up and went like that and did this throw up motion. Now, he had not eaten food for a couple of days, so no food came up, but he did this throw up motion. And I said, oh my word. Like I thought, I freaked out because I'd never seen anything like that happen before. And he looked at me and he said, give me the water. And so I got his cup of water that had a straw to it. And he started sipping it and spitting it back into the cup and sipping it and spitting back into the cup. So he finished with the water. And he said, now give me the juice, because we had like some carrot juice or something, that some kind of juice he'd been drinking. And he just drank that and laid back. And she said, now you fill him with peace, fill him with the love of the Lord. So I just prayed, you know, love and peace over him. And he went right to sleep, and that was it.
So those are manifestations.
Yes.
And when he looked at you, that was not him talking. That was
100%
the personality.
Right.
And I know you know this, but that gesture he made is, they do things sometimes leaving. When they come out.
Right. Yeah.
And sometimes they don't.
Right.
Sometimes they do. And sometimes it's a cough. Sometimes it's actually throwing up. Sometimes it's shaking. It's, but those are things that happen in a sort of a manifesting way, which is really, really neat. And to hear that happening, yeah, people aren't used to seeing that kind of thing.
Oh, I was not used to seeing that. And if I had not seen that, I think I would still question every deliverance I ever saw. Like, sure. A little bit of me would think, are they just putting that on a little bit? But I know my child, and he was the last. He's the kind of person that would be like, are they just putting that on?
Yeah, give me a break.
And the fact that he did that, I was like, okay, like, this is real. Like, you cannot tell me ever again that deliverance does not occur.
Yeah.
Because I watched it.
Yeah, it's just, you can think it's all some crazy superstitious thing, and that person's just a superstitious person. They're kind of, until it happens.
Exactly.
Until you see it, until you experience it. And then it's like, nope. Turns out all that stuff that we thought we had gotten too smart for, and intelligence level and all this other stuff, and turns out it's actually real.
Right.
And when you gain experience and you begin to see those kinds of things, it's just, scripture says, you know, I thank you, it was at Luke 10, thank you that you have hidden these things from the intelligent and wise and revealed them to infants. And so, yeah, it's so cool to hear that. Other ways that God made his presence in Frank's passing known.
It would be, so my faith is fine the whole way. Like, even he dies, I mean, of course, I freaked out a little bit. It was a traumatic memory for a while that I asked God to take away. He did. I can now picture it again, but I it's not as traumatic to remember anymore.
Yeah.
But during, I had a few moments of, oh crap, now I really have to do this. So I just started commanding him to wake up and spoke life into him. And so that continued for then the next 24 hours.
This was the shift into resurrection prayer.
Yes, shift into resurrection prayer. And we did that for, not constantly for 24 hours. It was more like just we kept the faith up in the room. We had worship music playing all the time just so that our focus was on the Lord. We did not go into, in our thoughts or in our words, of anything to do with death. It was all, you know, the next thing is right now to raise him up. So for 24 hours, we prayed. Well, 9 o'clock the next morning, and I had gone down into my dining room. I was pacing around in the dining room, walking circles around the table. So as I'm walking around pacing, I can see out the front windows that there's some activity with cars and people in the front of our house. And so and I just knew it had something to do with Frank. And so I went outside because there's a police car there also. And I just said, you know, can I help you? You know, what's going on? And they explained that there's an Alabama law that you have to be transporting a body within 24 hours of death. And so they were there to pick him up. I didn't know that was a thing. So all of a sudden, I'm thinking, I had already hung up with the hospice nurse just like an hour before, saying she wanted to, you know, like, check on us. Because her words when she left me Thursday morning right after he died was, you know, let me know when something changes. So the people are there, and I'm walk out in the mindset of thinking, well, no, I need to somehow make you leave. You know, we're in here still praying. We're not done. And they tell me that there's this law that, no, we're going to be leaving with him. And I was, so immediately, is there a religious exemption we can get because we're praying, you know, in faith in here? And that was a no. So I went upstairs. That's when I woke him up to say, we're not done praying. He's not awake yet. And there's people here to get him. I need you to go make them leave. That's when he said, I mean, I don't think he would want to leave. Like, he's with Jesus. And I'm like, but we can't, like, it can't happen. Like, I'm like, at that point, I'm spiraling. Like, this didn't happen. And God's about to not answer my prayers. And that's when I'm going into the, like, what the heck? Like, I'm panicking a little bit on the inside, not a little bit, a lot. And so when he said also that the disciples, it's okay, the disciples were confused when Jesus died. They didn't know what was going on yet and why. And he said, we're in good company. It'll be okay. Like, everything will be okay. I was like, oh, I got mad and left the room because that was not the answer I wanted to hear. Went outside, and the girl that was there praying with us, she's asking, you know, for also, she's saying, Matthew 10:8 says, raise the dead and heal the sick, and what we're in here doing. And so I let them know, I'm not going to fight you. I'm not going to, you know, be ridiculous about this. I'm going to let you take him, but I just want to make sure that we have to do this. So I make my way into the foyer. I'm standing almost in the same spot where my daughter was when I came down the stairs the morning before to tell her it's okay. And she walks into the room and reads my face of panic of like, oh no, my son is still dead and they're about to take him. And she said, Mom, you need to know that in the middle of the night, I felt Frank over my shoulder say, I don't want to leave. She said, he wants to stay in heaven. And hearing those words, just hearing that, if anybody else in the world had told me that was what they experienced, I wouldn't have believed them. I thought, you're just trying to make me feel better. But the fact that she said it, and she ended up getting a tattoo on that same shoulder, you know, in memory of that memory. It made it all okay. Like, I knew he was saying, I don't want to leave. I'm fine. Quit praying. So that was around just before 10, because they needed to be leaving at 10 something, early 10. The fellow that had flown in that was praying with us, he let me know. He said, there's two ladies that are praying. They're interceding. They don't know anything of what they're praying about. They just know to be interceding for the family I'm ministering with. He said, they both have texted me to say there's a young man who does not want to leave the presence of the Lord. And so she said, you know, that there's two confirmations of what Mary Clayton is saying.
These are people that are...
don't know us.
From where he is? He's in a place where
I'm sorry. The fellow that was at our house, his name is Harv. He was there praying with us. Harv had texted some of his friends to say, be praying, be interceding for, you know, me and this family. He didn't tell them, you know, I'm going to go pray resurrection over somebody. He just texted them to say, will you be in intercession for me while I'm in ministry to this family? Because
he a pastor?
He's not. Actually, he prayed the day before he got the phone call to say, will you come pray resurrection over this young man? This is interesting. He had the day before told the Lord, I want to be so available to you that I could get a phone call that says, you know, come serve me and I'll drop everything and do it. The next day he gets a phone call that says, will you come pray resurrection over this young man's body?
And he was in Jacksonville, Florida.
He lived in Jacksonville, Florida.
So he flew from Jacksonville.
Yes,
flew
to Birmingham.
So he texted people he knew that were somewhere else that didn't know this and just said, hey, we need your intercessory prayer with this family. Okay.
Yes.
And during that time, they then text him, not knowing what's going on necessarily.
During the night, what they're getting from the Lord as they're praying was, there's a young man who's no longer in the body and wants to stay in the presence of the Lord.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's powerful.
Yeah. So he didn't tell me that until she, you know, my daughter said that she had felt, letting me know Frank doesn't want to leave. He wants to stay in heaven.
So these are two confirmations that you've gotten pretty quickly.
Yes. Isn't that something? So we quit praying. We let his body leave. We did think about, because we asked, could we keep praying? Like, would he be able to walk out of the room? I know. We kid about it. Now we laugh of like, what did we sound like to these people? One of Kirk's, our best friends, when he heard us tell the story and we're telling that part that they know when they leave with this body that there's, you know, their family is praying resurrection, fully expecting it. Because we're asking, is there a doorknob? Will he be able to walk out? And they totally had the like, yeah, look when they said that. But one of our friends said, can you imagine being the guy driving the car?
Yeah. I had a guy on here, Pastor Benjamin Galindo, that died on the scene of a car wreck and left his body and was 15 feet or so, and God gave him a vision and he re-entered his body in the morgue and sat up and freaked out some people. So
yeah, I'm sure
it's not unprecedented, even just on this podcast. So anyway, continue with this part of the story.
Everybody's looking to us to say, do you want us to keep praying resurrection? Because we can do that. We can either go stand outside the morgue or we can just pray from here. At that point, I needed sleep. I had not slept well in a whole week. I had been fasting that whole week just in preparation. When things shifted, I wanted to just be in the right mindset. I said, let me go take a nap. And when I wake up, we'll decide. So somewhere in that after, that would have been 10-ish, 10:30.
And this is when Zida shares with us the text that she got.
Yes. So Zida came downstairs and she had a text from a girl that she had. So like, just like Harv had been texting his friends to say, be in prayer for me while I'm ministering to a family. Zida had done the exact same thing, had asked a few people, be in intercession. They knew nothing of what the situation was. They just knew, be in prayer for me and for this family while I'm in intercession for this family. And so she had gotten a text that said, I've got something for the Lord and I want to know if I'm correct.
So this is around, she sent the text around noon.
I was going to say it was in noon, the noon hour.
Okay.
That the text said, at 10 o'clock, I heard the Lord say, it's finished. And she knew, like we've talked to her since, so I'll fill in what that meant. She said she was actually standing at her sink washing dishes, and she just heard the Lord say, it's finished. And she knew that meant that somebody had just died. And so she said, I thought, no. Like, she didn't know what Zida was in ministry with us with doing, but she knew at that moment, oh, somebody just died. And my assignment was over. She said that it is finished. I knew somebody that had died and that my assignment to pray was done. And so she said, I kept praying in the spirit, in my flesh, like just because she knew that's not good. Surely you're going to override this, God. And just, you know, she knew that was probably not being well received everywhere. So she said, I kept praying, even though he told me, you know, you're done praying now at 10 o'clock. But then at 10:15, she had a vision of, she said it was God and a spirit man in the cosmos, facing each other.
And the spirit man rises up.
The spirit man, she said, it played like a movie, but like the spirit man rises up before the Lord, and the Lord, she said, they had a conversation. I couldn't hear what they were saying, but pink and green and yellow colors were coming out of the mouth of God, and going over the spirit man. And the girl, Zida, asked, you know, could you hear what they were saying, or did they stay in the cosmos? That's what she asked. Did they stay in the cosmos? And she said, the vision cut out.
We still have the text.
So I can look at it.
We can read it, but
I know it was at 10 o'clock was, it's finished. And at 10:15 was her seeing the vision and that of the pink and green and yellow colors. She ended up painting me a picture of what the vision looked like. She said, now this is just a snapshot because it played out like a movie of what she saw, but she painted me what the picture looked like of the vision that she saw.
And so the spirit man being Frank.
Yes.
And so at 10 o'clock was when the coroner came and took him out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys
Stopped praying.
Decision to stop praying for resurrection.
Right.
And sort of end that intercessor prayer.
Right.
Yeah. And released him
right
from that prayer. And so she elsewhere doesn't know any of these things and gets that word from God at the time of that it is finished, and then as if time is passing in the heavenlies, he approaches Jesus,
right,
who speaks.
She said
over
she could
him.
In the painting you could see like a city behind them, and I'm assuming that would be like the city of heaven.
Yeah, New Jerusalem.
Right.
And the pink and green and yellow.
Yeah, we just Googled, like, what do those colors significant, or what do they signify? Green was healing. Yellow and pink, were one was understanding and the other was purity.
What did that do to you?
Oh, when she read all that. I mean,
it was exciting.
I was so blown away. I'm like, oh my goodness, God is just revealing to us everything that was going on. I said, it's like he pulled back the curtain and said, I want you to see what was happening. And I felt like it was in response to our trusting him. And he's like, because you kept saying yes to me, because you kept saying, I will trust you and I will expect you to do above and beyond all I can ask or imagine. He's like, I'm going to show you what took place. And I'm going to have this girl have this vision, and she's going to share it with you, and you get to see, like, this is what was happening. So again, I'm like, oh my goodness, you're so much bigger than I ever imagined, you know?
That's a big statement right there. And even that doesn't really put it into perspective, but that's so good. That's so rich. It's how you feel when you fractions of his work is revealed to you. It's like, oh my gosh, you're way bigger than, way more genius than I can. It's like, I can't digest it mentally. Yeah. So did it change you? I mean, did that? I'm looking at two faces of peace.
Yeah.
In a horrible situation.
Right.
Otherwise.
That's partly where it came from. It was.
Yeah, it was a combination of just all of that stuff. You know, and every time something happened, whether it was Mary Clayton saying, I feel like he doesn't want to come back, and then Harv sending, you know, saying, here's the two texts I got, and then her reading this from this girl, and it was like God constantly going, here, I'm going to give you more. I'm going to just surround you with peace constantly that just keeps coming. And so, yeah, it was just overwhelming.
Yeah, and none of these things are things that are happening just within you and the core group. These are things that are coming from the outside. So, you know, you get into a skeptic place of, okay, well, you know, this is coping mechanisms. These are how to deal with it 101 when you can't deal with it. But you didn't manufacture these visions and texts that are coming from people out of state that are saying these things that happened at exactly this time. And I mean, I get a sister wanting to give her mom peace and saying, hey, I felt his presence say that he won't. I understand that, but that's not what more than the majority of these things are. These are things with people with different vested interests in this thing that are seeing things that probably to them don't make any sense, but to you make every bit of sense. And then you begin to piece it together and it's like, oh, okay, there's something bigger going on here. It's kind of like the coincidence things that we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, a couple coincidences, that's neat. And then something happens and it opens your eyes. It's like, oh my goodness, there's something bigger going on than what originally meets the eye.
Right.
So how has it changed you since then? As you can tell, there's more to this story than just the way God walked with this family through the loss of their son, how he delivered both Kirk and Frank from oppressive spirits that intended to change the course of this story, and even how God revealed Frank's heavenly beginning to his parents. All of that's powerful enough, but in true God fashion, his workings continue to move in unexpected directions. And that's what you'll hear when we pick this conversation back up next week. Thank you for joining us today on A Stronger Faith. We've included a link to the book Imagine Heaven by John Burke that we discussed in the episode. It's a book I often recommend to people, especially those that are dealing with the loss of a loved one. The link is found in the description of this episode. Make sure you come back next week to hear how God is continuing to shape the East family in ways they could have never foreseen. To recommend a guest for us, please visit astrongerfaith.org/contact. If you felt led to support this ministry financially, please visit astrongerfaith.org/give. Until next week, we pray for peace and a stronger faith for you and those you love.